Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Here is what got him suspended for this week's game in his broadcast role.
When his dark skin color with a dark football, with a dark uniform, you could not see that thing. I mean, you literally could not see when he was in and out of the mesh point, and and you're a half step slow.
I think we need the race car for like the next 5 minutes.
There you go.
How dumb can you be?
You know what that reminds me of? This is a case of nobody's talking about guy getting himself in trouble. Exactly. Because you look at this situation, he's going to try to be analytical and say the reason why it's so difficult to see the ball is because of the dark skin and dark jersey. I've played football for a long time in my life. I've coached football for a long time, about 30 years of my life. I'm 38, so like 30 years of my life I've been involved in football. There's never been a time when I said to myself, dang, I wish he was more light-skinned so I could see the ball better.
Exactly.
That is absolutely ridiculous. It makes no sense. And I've seen people on social media saying, well, it's a fact his arm is dark, and it's a fact the jersey is dark. It's a fact that, you know, he did a good job with the play action fake. But what I'm trying to tell y'all is this. It is not an actual thing that you have to take into consideration when you're playing football that, you know what, because his skin is dark, I can't see the football. There's never been a time I've seen Lamar Jackson or any other African-American quarterback run the ball and be like, damn, do we got the ball? I couldn't tell because it was blending into his arm. Like, get the hell out of here. Like, have you ever seen a pitcher say, oh, you know what I mean? Like, oh, Garrett Cole is such a damn good pitcher because, you know, so his hand is white, and so that ball is white, so it makes it harder for me to pick it up. Yeah. Like, dude is just – he was trying to take it to a next level and be analytical, and he just made a damn ass out of it.
I also feel that there's ignorance, there's bias, and then there's racism.
Yeah.
I don't think this was racism. I think this was a part ignorance – and part just an inherent bias in Tim Ryan's, you know, demeanor, personality, that he's just incredibly biased and dumb and, well, I guess ignorant. I just used that word because you're right. And when has that ever been anything real?
I've never even considered that before.
Like, but he did reveal himself a little bit is my point. I don't think he revealed himself as a racist. You know, I think racists go out of their way to either, you know, harm or ignore or, you know, hold something against, you know, people of color. I don't think he's that, but he is an ignorant, biased, you know, person.
My thought, too, is, like, he had to think about that. I heard Smitty and Trap talk about this last night on their show, Smitty and Trap. Like, you have to think about something, like, he sounded very to the point about what he wanted to talk about. So
yeah,
that's something that he thought about. That was something that was...
Ooh, I'm going to get him with this. Nobody's been talking about this. I'm going to put this out there, and they're going to be like, you know what?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
It is because he's so dark.
Because that is a well-thought-out thing that he said. It's stupid. It's idiotic. But he thought about that and said, you know what? It's hard to see when Lamar Jackson's handing the ball off because of this. And he had a very, you know, articulate sentence or two planned out on why Lamar Jackson was tough to stop when it came to the mesh point and the read options. So this is something that he thought about and thought was a good point and never picked up on. This is a really stupid thing to say.
Right.
It was stupid to say, but it was illegitimate. Like, this actual point he was making, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
And so that makes it that much worse. There's never been a time that I've seen any quarterback running with the ball and then all of a sudden I'm like, dang, Like, how come, like, Kaepernick, he's bright-skinned black dude. Like, I mean, I guess, you
he
know.
He matches the ball better.
But they run the same offense. You know what I mean? I was like, it makes no damn sense. And it was crazy to me. And I haven't talked to anybody about this that said, well, yeah, it makes sense. Because they probably wouldn't have that conversation with me because of who I am. But I'm just saying, like, I read stuff about this on Twitter, on Facebook. And people were like, well, he just was telling the facts. And people are so sensitive these days. Like, no, like, I'm like, I don't want to pull that card of saying, well, you must have never played the game before. But
right.
I mean, for you to formulate that opinion, think this is a legitimate thing that, like, because his skin is that color, it hides the ball. It makes me think you have no clue about football. Like, you see the ball, you get the ball, and it can't be hidden because of someone's skin color. To me, it just diminishes who Lamar Jackson is as a quarterback. And it's saying he's really good because of this. It reminds me of, remember when Romanowski said that, like, black dudes had like an extra muscle in their calf or something like that. and that's why they're so fast and so athletic. And it's like, chill out, bro. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah. So that's what I saw in the situation. Is he racist? Man, I don't care if he's racist or not. What he is dumb.
Yeah. Right.
And what he said didn't make any
sense. That's exactly what I think.
And it got himself into some trouble because it was a dumb thing to say. And definitely it people will get offended by what he said because, like I said, it diminishes who Lamar Jackson is as a quarterback. And it makes it – I mean, the best play-action quarterback in the history of the league was Peyton Manning. That's the least darkest skinned dude I've seen in a long time. And he knew how to hide the ball. What the hell does his skin color have to do with it?
That's a good point. That's an absolutely good point.
He apologized. The San Francisco 49ers apologized. I'm surprised, too, that he was only suspended the one game, but he's expected to be back in the booth before the end of the season. Speaking of Lamar Jackson, the NFL released their Player of the Month awards. Lamar Jackson named the Offensive Player of the Month for the AFC. The Defensive Player of the Month was a Watt. T.J. Watt over in Pittsburgh. Harrison Butker, the Chiefs kicker, was named the Special Teams Player of the Month. On the NFC side, Michael Thomas, the Offensive Player of the Month. Defensive Player of the Month, Fred Warner, second 49er to win that award in a row. Nick Bosa won it last month. And then the NFC Special Teams Player of the Month was Bears kick returner Cordero Patterson. So, got some big names on that list. Lamar Jackson continues to rack up some accolades on his way to what seems like an MVP.
How close is the MVP race right now?
I think it's still close between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. Both of those guys, yeah, that guy. I don't want to see you in the morning, though, Russ. But, yeah, man, I no thank
still
you, Russ.
Still
you
no.
Know, just talk to Sierra. I don't want any of that smoke. But, yeah, man, like, I think that the race is neck and neck between those two teams. And so into those two guys, and it's going to come down to who ends up having home field advantage through the playoffs. I think that if the Ravens end up with home field advantage throughout the playoffs – then Lamar will get it. And the same will go for Russell Wilson because those two are the catalysts and the reasons why their individual teams would end up with home field advantage.
I think Lamar has it wrapped up. Unless he just disappears in these last four games, I think he has it wrapped up. He's had an unbelievable season, second year in the league. There is some football tonight, Thursday Night Football. You can listen to it right here on Sports Radio 610. 2-6-6 teams go at it. Both are desperate. The Dallas, maybe lit. Dallas Cowboys going into Chicago to take on the Bears. Cowboys are 3-point favorites, a road favorite tonight in Chicago. I got to admit, I am intrigued by this matchup. Trubisky looked pretty good on Thanksgiving. I'm curious to see how he looks against the Dallas Cowboy defense. And, you know, it's always fun to root against the team from up north.
Yeah, that's a city we didn't mention earlier that people just across the country hate, mostly because of the Cowboys.
People
but Mark
there.
Cuban gets his share. Mark Cuban gets his share of hate as
right
well.
Right now?
No,
or in the past, because earlier we were talking about right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say right now.
No,
I think the Cowboys
people
are
love
always
Luka
right
Doncic
now. The Cowboys are always right now. The Mavericks, I kind of like right now because of Luka.
They're a likable team, man. They were likable when Dirk was there.
Yeah.
Now, the owner has been.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, the owner was.
Yeah.
I hated Dirk when he played. It was like sports hate, though. Like, I respected his game. I like Dirk now in hindsight.
Because he's done?
Because he's done. Like, kind of same thing with Derek Jeter. Like, I sports hated Derek Jeter, but now I appreciate his greatness. I didn't like Jordan that much.
I love Jordan.
Jordan
was my guy, man. And it was a lot of times, it was one way or the other. You loved him because that was your guy, or you hated him because he was beating your guy's team.
Right.
And so that's part of the deal. That's one thing about sports hate. If you're hated, for more likely than not, you have a good-ass team. You know, it's very difficult to be hated by a bunch of people if your team is sorry because they don't care about you. They don't even pay attention to you. So why the city of Houston might be getting hated on more than normal, that's because they have franchises that are good. And so that's where Lopez was talking about, just embrace the hate and ride with it. It is what it is. You're not trying to make friends. You're trying to win championships.
These are probably good, too.
And so, that's why Boston is the most hated city, because they keep winning in all different sports. And so I think you should wear it as a badge and honor. I just didn't agree with the fact that Houston was the number one worst or most hated city in the United States of America.
We can talk about it again a little bit later. Sean McVay, head coach of the L.A. Rams. They've had an up-and-down season. They had a really good week last week. Jared Goff, I believe, won the NFC Offensive Player of the Week after we were just crushing him. We were crushing him. Mm-hmm. We were crushing the contract. We said, is he worth it? And then he went out and had a huge week. Well, McVay was asked about Todd Gurley, and apparently Todd Gurley's starting to be used a little bit more. His production is going up, which as fantasy owners are saying, why now? Why did you wait so long? But McVay was asked why Gurley's usage is starting to increase, and McVay said, well, that's him not being an idiot anymore. Sean McVay realizing that, hey, I need to use Todd Gurley a bit more. I think, honestly, this was Sean McVay.
He's talking about himself.
He's talking about himself. Yeah. He said Sean McVay, the play caller, is being an idiot not using Todd Gurley. Sean McVay said that. I actually think Sean McVay's having Gurley's back here. To me, the plan all along was to preserve Todd Gurley for late in the season. We saw how he broke down in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. To me, the idea for the Rams and McVay was we're going to be patient with Gurley. We're going to manage his load early in the season and have him pick it up towards the end of the year. This is McVay, to me, just kind of covering up his whole plan.
Yeah, that, and also you have to think about it. They're about to be out of the playoff race. So you got to play your best guys and give them the ball the most because you have must-win situations every week now. As opposed to going into the season, like you said, he probably had a game plan of, hey, we're just going to bring him along slowly. We're going to make sure that he's ready to go when we get to the playoffs. But it's like, hey, you got to bump that up sooner and actually give him those carries because we're trying to win ball games. If we lose, we're out of it. And so he's covering his own ass. He's looking out for his guy. But sometimes coaches – They outthink themselves and they overdo themselves. But when you have a running back like Gurley that has been invested that much money and you have to get as much value out of him as you can, and if he's injured, you're not getting anything out of him. So it makes sense that he would bring him along, but you know that he played him more recently because they're up against it as an organization.
I think they are done. They're not technically, so you know I could be wrong there. I think they are done. I also think the agent was probably really, really ringing the phone in that building about, hey, man, you know, because they, you know this. I mean,
do you
agent,
think they care anymore? Their agent, you think, because he's got money.
He's got his money.
He's got the check.
He's got his money, but I'm sure, you know, Todd Gurley. I mean, what does a running back want to do? Running back wants to get those yards and those Pro Bowls and the, you know, and all that stuff. I bet you that agent was really, really pestering about that. Hey, you guys are just about out of it anyway. Why don't you just run my guy? I think that was part of it, too.
The race for the sixth seed in each conference is pretty fascinating. In the AFC, it's kind of a pile of mediocrity. The Steelers and the Titans tied at 7-5. Steelers have the tiebreaker. The Raiders and the Colts are only one game back at 6-6. The Rams are still lingering.
They're there, but
I'd like
I don't
to
buy
see them get in. They're,
yeah.
they're 7-5. They're one game behind Minnesota, but they have a far more difficult schedule the rest of the way. Seattle this week, at Dallas the week after, then at San Francisco. And then they closed their season against the Cardinals. So they played three solid teams, three teams that are very much in the playoff race. Meanwhile, the Vikings have a soft schedule, so it'd be tough for the Rams to catch up with the Minnesota Vikings. The OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Brown. I'm in for Landry Locker. Coming up next, Houston, the city that's hated the most of any city when it comes to sports hate. Also, Jonathan Joseph, where does he belong in the conversation with other Texans greats? That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Brown. I'm in for Landry Locker. Landry will be on with Clint Sterner, 2-6. The dream team out at the Twin Peaks in Webster. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Houston is the most hated sports city in the entire country.
Says you.
James Harden, people hate all across the NBA. You can weigh in on this loophole. 713-572-4610. 713-572-4610. James Harden, the style of play, people hate. They hate that he's gaming the system and scoring 60 when it seems like whenever he wants to. They think he's playing a video game out on the floor. They think he's ruining the NBA. The Rockets complain. They whine. They want to protest. They think that the NBA should grant them a victory with 8 minutes left to play in the game because the referees got a James Harden dunk call wrong when they really blew a huge lead, 22 points that night, and were up 9 with 2.5 minutes left to play. Everybody hates the Astros because they're cheating. They're using technology with the cameras out in the wall. They have computers in the clubhouse. They're banging on trash cans. They're blowing whistles during playoff games. They're stealing signs. They're doing all these things. Carlos Correa pimps a home run. Alex Bregman carries the bat with him basically all around the bases. The United States of America hates the city of Houston sports scene more than any other city in America. Coast to coast is how strong the hate is.
JB, What you been drinking over there, bro? What's in the Yeti? Tell me what's in the Yeti.
It's a little black coffee.
Oh, okay,
black
a little black coffee. I thought there was something else, some black Hennessy. First of all, like that, bro.
That was a heavy favorite that his favorite kind of coffee is black.
That was heavy favorite?
Yeah.
Why is that, John?
Isn't it yours?
He's just a play-by-play guy, man. Just give me the...
He's a color analyst.
Yeah, just give me the nut here.
Just inject it into my veins. Yeah.
I just want the facts. I just want it straight. Don't give me any of that fluff.
None of that fluff.
How do you drink your coffee?
I'm kind of like Pulp Fiction.
Cream and Mexican sugar?
Lots of cream, lots of sugar. That's actually very good.
I know it's good.
Mexican sugar is amazing.
It's really, really good. Those Cokes with the cane sugar.
Yeah.
Ooh, baby. That's what it is. It's sugar cane.
There you go.
It's like old school.
My grandpa brings those back to me from the valley. He'll go just across the border and bring me back a huge pallet. It's not even a case.
Hoya?
It's a pallet of Coke. It's some Hoya. I don't like the Hoya as much, but he'll mix in some red and orange.
Yeah.
I'll bring you some. You want some?
Yeah,
I'll bring you some. I have some. I don't like it that much. I'll bring it to you, but you have to bring me back the bottle because I'll get the refund out of Mexico.
Okay, I got you. I can drink it and just hand it to you right there on the spot.
It's legit, man.
I'll bring you some tomorrow.
But the Houston sports hate, I cut you off. Yeah,
no,
but the Houston sports hate, it's real. People outside of this city hate the Houston Rockets and the Houston Astros right now. I don't think there's any sports hate at all for the Houston Texans. The Texans have a bunch of likable players. I think that there's more people in this city that are turned off by a guy like J.J. Watt than anybody naturally is. I think people naturally love J.J. Watt. So if I had to compare them to other cities, for sure Boston is a more hated sports city than the city of Houston. But if you're hated as a sports city, that means your teams are doing good. And you're complaining about, you're talking about James Harden and about the way he plays and his style of play. To me, Luka Doncic has the exact same skill set in the same game. Do people hate his game? I think people love and enjoy watching him play. So what's the difference between Luka and James Harden?
Hmm. What is the difference between those two guys?
Throw it, Luka. Come on.
Hmm.
Y'all see Luka, by the way, won the Western Conference Player of the Month over James
Harden?
I
hate how much I like the Mavericks now. I grew up just...
I don't like the Mavericks. I like Luka. Like, I hate everything else about the Mavericks. I don't like Kristaps. I don't like Kristaps that
much.
Tim Hardaway Jr.? No, I don't like the unicorn much. I really don't like Carlisle that much.
I really like that.
I despise Mark Cuban.
Carlisle is a great coach.
I don't disagree.
He's a great coach.
If Carlisle came here
and became the Rockets head coach, you'd be excited.
Sure.
Right or wrong?
No doubt.
Sure.
So why you hate him?
Well, I mean, if John Stockton came to Houston, was the point guard, I'd be all aboard for that, too.
No, I wouldn't, though. See, I hated John Stockton. I hated Karl Malone. So, no, if they came on my team, I'd be like, what the hell are we doing? There's certain people out there, like if they came on your team.
No, I never hated Westbrook.
But in this town, you're right.
Who's the one player that you hated the most? Like, we talked about Houston potentially being the most hated sports city. Boston's in the mix. New York's in the mix. LA's in the mix. My most hated sports athlete of all time was by far John Stockton. Maybe Karl Malone. Those two, though,
Malone was mine. He got on my nerves, man. Everything about him just struck me as I just didn't like him, and I love the fact that my team, the Bulls, would beat him.
Right.
But I just didn't like him at all. Then he won the damn MVP over Jordan that year, and I was just like, man, that really set me off. But I couldn't stand Karl Malone.
As a kid, you know, as a fan, as a high schooler and middle schooler and younger, it was probably I hated Kareem.
You hated Kareem?
I hated Kareem.
Oh, why? Man,
because
why?
I grew up in San Antonio.
Not Lou.
And the Spurs lost to him in 3 conference finals.
That makes sense.
You know, I loved Magic. It's kind of like Luka. Yeah. You know, I loved Magic because I'm like, this dude is amazing. I mean, he's amazing. Even though he's beaten, you know, my hometown team, I just loved Magic. But the Spurs could not get over freaking Kareem, man.
You know who I hated in basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Laimbeer.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't stand Bill Laimbeer.
I covered that team.
I couldn't stand
I went to 3 of their finals.
Wasn't he, like, really rich? Like, his dad, like, owned a...
I respect Bill. This is going to sound... You're going to hate me now. I respect Bill Laimbeer more than just about any player I've ever been around. His dad was a billionaire, and he played with that passion. I mean, he played with that passion and that grit.
He was just an antagonist.
Yeah, he was.
He could play, but he just antagonized people.
He could have been just freaking living on a beach. I mean, I'm not talking rich.
Yeah.
You're talking about rich.
With a B.
You're
talking about rich.
Yeah. The best kind of money there is, liquid, you know, old.
I never knew that about him. And if somebody told me that about him, I wouldn't have believed it. Because the way he played the game.
No doubt about it. He was dirty.
Yeah.
He was easy to hate. But I'm like, this dude is playing like, this guy loves basketball. I mean, he loves basketball, and there's no he became a WNBA coach.
Yeah,
and he's a billionaire.
Is he still coaching? I thought he was. The last I checked, he was, but I haven't paid attention.
You gotta love something a lot to be a billionaire and coach in the WNBA.
713-572-4610. Loopholes. Who are the most hated players you've ever had? We have Albert Pujols, Tom Brady, Gus and Katie says the entire Utah Jazz. So there's some good ones. 713-572-4610. One guy that's not. Somebody that anybody would hate, I would imagine, is Jonathan Joseph. He spent a long time now with the Houston Texans. This past weekend, by the way, he broke up multiple passes in a game and is now the all-time leader in multiple pass breakups in a single game. Kind of a reaching stat, but it shows you how long he's been in the NFL, and it shows you how long he's been successful in the NFL. And it's a good question that that Lopez brought up. Where does J.J.O. belong in the conversation of Texans greatness?
Let me set it up for you, Wade, because I started thinking of this when I saw, you know, his accomplishment, you know, this past weekend and all the past breakups, and then I started looking at his numbers. I think you got five players that are the five greatest in Texans history: Arian, Andre, obviously Deshaun, JJ, and D-Hop. I think those are the five. You know, that's the playoff grouping, even though it's five. You know, that's the guy that make the very top of the list. I'm not so sure Jonathan Joseph isn't six. And let me lay it out for you. You might say D'Amico Ryans is in the hunt. He's got just as many Pro Bowls and has played longer here now than D'Amico Ryans. You might say Brian Cushing. He's got more Pro Bowls and has played here longer than Brian Cushing. A lot of these guys, you might say Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown's on the list, all right? Dwayne Brown would be maybe a push to me, but again, he's been here 9 years now, and then I started looking at the numbers. He got here in his sixth season in the NFL. This guy's amazing. I mean, he got here in his sixth season in the NFL. He has since played 9 years with the Texans. Suppose that he came here as a rookie in 2011, all right? In those 9 years, he's got 16 interceptions, 5 forced fumbles, 116, I believe, pass breakups, and 3 touchdowns. I think he might be behind the top five, I think he might be the next best Texan in history.
So this is tough for me to kind of talk about, because these are all my brothers, my contemporaries. Mm-hmm. And
you have
guys
the numbers.
We could text them right now and be like, you think you better than D. Brown or what? But I'm not going
to
text him.
Lopez does. He's a loophole. He listens to our show.
I'm sure he might be listening right now, but he's got to get ready for Denver, so I don't want him worrying about this conversation.
Didn't you say he was a step slow or something like that?
I did.
J.J.?
I said he might be.
People have been trying to get rid of J.J. for the longest, man, and I'm glad he's just going out
there. I said he might be, and then I corrected it after the season.
Jesus, he might be a step slow. The next thing he's doing the Ring of Honor.
See, I tell you what, man. My top five does not include Deshaun Watson yet. He ain't got there yet. I expect him to get there, but he doesn't include it in that year. I think the top five is you got Dre, JJ, Arian, Dwayne, Hop. Those are the top five Texans to this point. And then after that, you got D'Amico, Cushing, J.J.O., that kind of group is right there. But so I would put J.J.O., he's definitely top 10. I'll say he's top 10 for sure. And if I had to put him at a place, it would probably be like 6 or 7.
Ring of Honor guy, though?
For sure.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, for sure he's going to be in the Ring of Honor, because he's checked every box that you would want to check. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if J.J.O. has a position either in the front office or if he wants to be on the coaching staff as soon as he's done. Like, he can just walk out the locker room and go upstairs and have a role there, because that's just the type of person he is and what he brings to the organization. They love him over there and with reason. And so, J.J., I'm happy for him that he's been able to play so well this season, especially with the way it started against the Chargers, and people were so down on him after that game against Keenan Allen. But it's like, yo, it's Keenan Allen. And back then, Phillip Rivers was playing good at the quarterback position. He's since fallen off, but J.J.'s had a damn good year, and going to need him to keep having a good year in order for the Texans to get where they want to go.
Did you guys mention D-Hop?
Yeah. I have him in my top five.
He was my top five.
Yeah, I was listening.
I think right behind those five is J.J.O. or Dwayne Brown. Or I think those are the two that would be
my
right
five
there.
Andre, J.J., Arian, Dwayne, Hop. Those are the top five.
And I got Deshaun instead of Dwayne.
Arian to the Ring of Honor. That'd be an interesting question.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. Is he deserving of it as far as what he did on the field? For sure. Will he get that? The hell if I know.
OG John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham in for Landry Locker. Coming up next, the evolution we've seen from Bill O'Brien, the head coach. You're listening to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. The OG, John Lopez, we're hanging out. What's Wade up? Smith, Jeremy Branham in for Landry Locker. You can still listen to Landry Locker. 2 to 6 tonight. They'll be at the Twin Peaks in Webster. If you're out in that area, stop by, say hello. Yeah, there's going to be some cussing and discussing going on. There's going to be...
We putting any money on this?
What are we putting money on? The Dream Team together with Landry Locker and Clint Sterner. 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 610. That'll be good radio, though, so stay here till 6 on Sports Radio 610. We also have the Dallas Cowboys-Chicago Bears game tonight, which I'm intrigued in. I'm intrigued by every NFL game. Who are we kidding? But those are two desperate teams at 6-6. Dallas going on the road to face Chicago. Like, if Dallas loses and they're humiliated, we could be talking about a firing tomorrow. We could be talking
about
a firing
Should have been talking about
tomorrow.
One last week.
Yeah, he should have. Jason Garrett has earned himself out of Dallas long, long time ago, but... Jerry Jones straight up said, for one, I'm going to give him to the rest of the year. And then for two, he said he's going to be coaching somewhere next year. Even if it's not here, he's going to be coaching somewhere, a head coach somewhere in the NFL.
Yeah.
So he's got that much of a vote of confidence from the decision maker there. So I don't see Jerry.
That's
Jason
not a
Garrett
vote of confidence. Let's say we're going to fire you.
Next year.
Next year or at the end of this year?
Earlier,
he said he'll be coaching next year, the first season.
The first point I made was that he said he's not going to fire him before the end of
season. Oh, yeah. No, he didn't
say
that.
He's going to let him see that. That's
but
the
he also
first
said
point.
He'll be coaching somewhere next year.
He'll be exactly. So that's a double vote of confidence that you know he'll be a head coach. Does Jason Garrett deserve to be a head coach anywhere else?
I took it the other way.
Exactly. So to me, it's keeping the door wide open for him coming back. Because what other organization is going to look at Jason Garrett's resume and say, you know what? We want him to be our guy.
I can't disagree with you more on this.
I couldn't either. I'm with the OG.
I think this is how I interpret it. I'm going to fire his ass.
Yeah.
But I like him enough because I've been around him for 11 years or however many it's been that I'm going to say something nice about him. He should be coaching next year. I think that's it.
That could very well be true, but it also leaves the door open for him
of
to
course.
Come back.
Yeah,
that's all
technically,
I'm saying.
Yeah, technically.
I don't think he'd be coaching next year, period.
I don't either.
Especially don't think it'd be anywhere else besides Dallas. Like, the best chance he has of coaching next year is with Dallas.
That's
but
my
I think
point.
Jerry Jones was kind of spinning it, saying, yeah, he deserves to be a head coach next year, and then kind of leaving it at that, not saying it's going to be in Dallas. Speaking of head coaches, the evolution of Bill O'Brien. I think we have to give Bill O'Brien some credit for what we've seen so far in 12 games this season, the 8-4 record. Like, this offense is completely rebuilt around Deshaun Watson. We're seeing some RPOs. We've never seen that before in the past. There was one time whenever we were looking back at Bill O'Brien saying that he needed a big, strong-armed quarterback that wasn't very
mobile, he was looking
would
for
sit
him.
In the pocket. Yeah, the Penn State quarterback that everybody linked to.
And Ryan Mallett.
Ryan Mallett. Yeah.
Hackenberg.
Was somebody that, Hackenberg wound up in Houston. But Bill O'Brien has evolved. He's kept an open mind. He's completely changed the way that his offense looks. And he's rebuilt it to success as well. The Texans are in the top 10 in both offensive yards. They're in the top 3 in touchdowns. You've seen what Deshaun Watson gives you with his 106 quarterback rating. Mm-hmm. The Texans have the fourth best third down conversion percentage. They have the fourth best touchdown rate. That means how many touchdowns they're scoring for every single drive that they have. This Texans offense, and Bill O'Brien, last time I checked, is the one calling the plays. He has the pad over there on the sideline, sending him into Deshaun Watson. It is his job, and he's doing a good job at it. I think that Bill O'Brien has had a great year as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, I don't know. I thought you were going to say as an executive because
that too.
As an exec, because we talked about it. Once they got that team together, they got all those skill position players. We said there's no way that this team shouldn't be a top 10 offense. I know y'all talked about that on this show on In the Loop. I remember Landry saying that a bunch. It should be a top 10 offense. Now you just read out the stats. 12 games into the season, they actually are a top 10 offense. So to me, that's par for the course, and you have to give them. You have to give him his just due as an executive for putting the squad together to make that happen. But has he maximized the talent on the roster as an offensive coordinator to the best of what we feel like he should be able to do?
For the most part,
yes. But there's been times where you look at it and be like, what the hell is going on? Like, you look at that Jacksonville game, you look at the Carolina game, you're like, man, this is not what you should be seeing out there with this product because there's too much talent for them to be playing that way.
I kind of see where you're going with this, Jeremy, but I just can't fully agree until I see a touchdown on the first drive of a game.
That's a good point.
I got to be able to see that, and I got to be able to see kind of speaks to what we were mentioning earlier about one great game and then one flop, one great game, one flop. I want to see a touchdown on the first drive of a game. You can't be in week 14 waiting for that. I agree with most of what you said. He is better. They are running more plays. The trick play just about floored me. I mean, my jaw.
Did you love it?
I loved it.
Jeremy hated it.
I loved it.
I'm pointing at Jeremy right now.
No, the execution could have been better, but that wasn't Bill O'Brien's fault.
No, I hated the play call.
Can you tell him why?
Yeah, this is why I hated it. For one.
I want you to hear this.
Yeah. One, it reminded me of the DeAndre Hopkins throwback that led to an interception.
But it went across the field.
First and foremost. I understand. First and foremost, though, it's a trick play. It's a trick play. It's gimmicky when you don't need to be trick playing gimmicky. The Texans were moving the ball at that particular point. They got the ball at the 25 on that drive. They're marching down the field. They're moving the ball with ease. It was a first and goal from the 6-yard line. Like, why get cute? Do what's working. Play it safe. You don't need to have this trick play. And keep in mind, like, how it all happened. The ball's floating in the air. It's fluttering in the air. If that ball gets picked up by McCourty or Gilmore or whatever the case may be, and
how
goes the other way.
How was it going to get
picked up? You saw the way the ball was floating in the
air.
It could have
easily
been picked up. Nope. Deshaun Watson caught it. Somebody could have cut across to Deshaun Watson in front of his face and took it back the other way. Okay, answer me this question real quick. If that ball gets picked off and goes the other way for 6, what's the narrative? How are we talking about that play today?
Okay, but that's a different topic because Bill O'Brien is really always the whipping boy in this town. I think most reasonable people would have said, wow, they really caught him by surprise. Horrible throw by D-Hop, his second of the year. Because that first one was a horrible throw.
But see, the first one he was set up for failure because
it was
that
across
was a bad
the field.
Play call, yes.
It was all the way
but
across
this
the field.
Was a great play call.
I thought the play call was fantastic, and the execution by D-Hop could have been better, but they still made it work. But beyond that, I'm just talking about the offense. I think he's evolved. That shows me he evolved with the play call. Also, the little run-pass option with the stacked receivers that Fell scored on.
Yeah.
We've seen that RPO, but not with that second receiver, which drew the cornerback out. Yeah. Or maybe he's done it and I haven't seen it. But,
you're talking about the one with the 3 tight end look?
Yeah.
Yeah, they took that from the Ravens.
See, like
and
that
was beautiful that they incorporated that because they saw that the Patriots had struggled with that a couple of weeks before
right.
when they played the Ravens.
Exactly. So that shows me some development on Bill O'Brien. Clearly just running RPOs in general. I think changing the offense. You're right. But God dog it, they've scored 20 points or less 4 times, and the next one to that was 23 points. So 23 points or less 5 times in an NFL season. You got to get to 28 to me.
If
you're going to be an offensive team, you got to get to 28. To be a really considered, and then they don't score on an opening drive.
I would say those are 2 very good points. The fact that they haven't scored on an opening drive to me is more mental than anything else. Because if they're scoring the 4th highest rate of their series ending in touchdowns, how do they just not like luck into a touchdown?
Yeah.
So to me, that seems like it's something mental that's going on there for some reason. I would also point to the point total. 28 points is a good number for an offense. I'd like to look at their schedule and see like their last few weeks because I think the offense is starting.
I got
to
it right
a
here.
Bit.
You're talking about total points?
Yeah, like last 3 or 4.
Obviously, 28-22, they beat them. They only scored 20 but 1 against the Colts, 7 against the Ravens.
That was a bad outing.
And 26 against I just realized this. They haven't scored more than 30 points since Kansas City.
That's a big 30 is a big
That's
total.
A big number.
No,
that's
I like to get to 28.
And sometimes
27, 28 will win
too that help you get those amount of points because
right.
when you get defenses that score or you get turn them over
pace
and reds and all that stuff matters. But the thing that I really loved about that particular play and what I've seen out of Bill O'Brien as an offensive coordinator is the fact that that play was given to him by his players. And he took that play and said, you know what, we're going to actually implement that. Mm-hmm. As a player, when you know that your coach values your input and will actually put it out there and potentially have to take the hit if it goes wrong, you appreciate that as a player. And so, you know, this is Deshaun Watson and his quarterbacks and A.J. McCarron bringing him a play. And he says, you know what, I like this. Let's go ahead and put it in. And
the other thing is when the player suggests it, not that they don't work hard, but they're really going
to
work everything, do everything they can
to
make
to
sure
make
that play
happen.
Works.
Yeah. So they can keep that communication, an open line to where, you know what, he's going to take what we say and actually put it into practice. So I definitely have to give him credit for that part of it. And you can hate the play all you want to, JB,
but it
was beautifully done. I loved everything.
Jeopardizes
about it.
Watson, puts him in a position of vulnerability. You're dominating the game.
Go get
You're
some more black coffee.
Smashing it down their throat.
See, I feel like JB, if you were Deshaun's offensive coordinator, you wouldn't even be running RPOs.
See, no, because
him.
I love the 3 tight end set. I love the diamond package when they scored that. I love a lot of those options.
He would never get to carry the ball though.
Nah, That's probably true. I try to protect him, especially when you lead by two possessions. Like, I would give him, I would let him carry the ball and run with the ball, like in must have it spots where you need to have it. Whenever you're up by two possessions and you're driving down the field about to score anyways, like, that's not the time to do it. Deshaun Watson said that he didn't like the defense that they aligned against it, and
yeah,
he probably should have checked out of it.
But he wanted to succeed.
He wanted to play. Like, we're going to make this happen.
He said, I have to do it so bad because we'll never get another chance. But even he didn't like the look that he got. But back to the point about Bill O'Brien evolving as a coach. And one of the other things that I love about what he's done this season is that they've added pieces around Deshaun Watson, whether it's the protection with Titus Howard drafting him in the first round, Max Sharping in the second round, the trade for Laremy Tunsil, but also adding to his arsenal. Like, he gets that Deshaun, he's going to live by Deshaun Watson, die by Deshaun Watson.
Well, good,
it's more living
advice
than dying, right? Yeah. So he protects him with those three names I mentioned, but he also adds to his arsenal with Darren Fells, Kenny Stills, and Duke Johnson. I think that we've seen some evolution for Bill O'Brien, not being stubborn, changing his game plan, changing his philosophy, you know, putting a little bit of risk out there for trading for Laremy Tunsil, using two high commodity draft picks, a first-rounder for Titus, a second-rounder for Sharping, and then also the other pieces that he traded for. To me, it's a different Bill O'Brien than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I really believe that Bill O'Brien, the executive, has done a better job than Bill O'Brien, the offensive coordinator or head coach, but I think he's done a good job at both. And so you're almost splitting hairs here, but I think that his job that he's done as an executive really should be commended. You go back and look at the different trades that he's made, the different guys they've acquired, and you can't just give it all the credit to Bill O'Brien. You have to give it to his pro personnel staff. You have to give it to a guy like Romeo Crennel, who was his defensive coordinator. He's seeing these DBs out on the street and looking at them and say, you know what, these guys will fit into my scheme and work well. And so I think taking out that middleman of the GM has helped them tremendously this year, but I still believe Nick Caserio is going to come next year and help Bill O'Brien throughout the process, because I think there will be – it won't be synergy. It'll be, I completely trust this guy to do the job. And so that's something I think we can look forward to.
I don't understand why he would come. You're one of several people that firmly believe that. McClain believes that. It's a lateral move. And it's a lateral move for an organization that hasn't won the championships that you have where you are.
I think it's about relationships. Mm-hmm. Who would you rather work for in that capacity? Bill Belichick or Bill O'Brien?
Those guys that might be a push.
I'm looking at it from the perspective that those guys are contemporary. They probably are
age-wise, where they grew up in the organization.
All those things come into play. It's like playing for your dad or being a player with your best friend from down the street. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, it's just different.
Yeah.
And so I could see him coming to a new environment because it's a new challenge. You've been in New England forever.
Or he just hates it there.
He could want to move to the city of Houston. It's a lot of reasons I think that make sense for him to want to come here and make his input and his impact in this organization.
If I were Caserio, not knowing his motives, but if me putting myself in his shoes, wanting to succeed as a general manager, succeed as a director of player personnel or whatever, I'd want to go somewhere where I have control of the 53. Like, if I'm being asked if it's only Texans, only Patriots, then I can see the argument for the Texans. But if somebody else is courting me, they're offering me just as much money, just as nice a place to live. Well, he probably has other relationships around the NFL. I want control of the 53.
Let me ask you this. You're Nick Caserio. You can come be a glorified scout for Bill O'Brien and not the general manager.
Is it that bad?
It's kind of what he's going to be.
So is he a glorified scout for the Patriots right now?
How about this? Glorified director of scouting. Glorified director of scouting.
Is that what you think he is with the Patriots now, though?
That's what he is.
Director of player personnel. I mean, tomato.
No, he is. Bill Belichick makes every call, just like Bill O'Brien's going to make every call here. So just play along here.
Okay.
Glorified director of scouting, I'll make it even sound better for him. Right-hand man.
Yeah.
Let's say he comes down and
sure that's better.
He's the right-hand man of Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Or would you go to Jacksonville, become the general manager, which they're going to have a new general manager, and bring Josh McDermott with you?
You're asking me this
McDaniels.
Question.
Yeah.
I'm for sure going to come to Houston and Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a dumpster
where you
fire.
Can be the general manager and bring your coach?
It's Jacksonville.
I understand.
It's Jacksonville. Give me a different city. Give me
Carolina.
Give me some different
Carolina
assets.
Might have the same situation.
Carolina, now we're talking. But Jacksonville, no. But Carolina, now we're talking. And in this scenario,
Jacksonville has 9 draft picks this year.
They have a bunch of draft picks. They have Christian McCaffrey. They have a fan
base. No, not Carolina. Jacksonville has 9 draft picks.
Oh, Jacksonville has 9 draft picks.
They don't have a quarterback,
it's
though.
It's Jacksonville. If you don't have
good.
A quarterback.
If I'm a general manager, I like good. That.
How many times have GMs failed because they could not get a quarterback?
No, but
more
but,
times than not, you will fail at that part of the job.
I totally agree.
So why take the risk?
Because you can bring in your quarterback, and they love doing that.
Oh, answer me this. You don't think that Caserio did his scouting on Deshaun Watson and said, damn, I would love to have that kid here?
Well, sure.
So then this in his mind, it is his quarterback. That's the guy I wanted anyway. But
oh, no,
Brady
I understand
here,
so, that.
So I'm saying if you have Deshaun Watson here, you're good.
No. Deshaun Watson is the biggest plus for anybody to come here. But I'm talking about general manager in charge of everything, including what people wear to the office. I mean, you are the man when you're the general manager. And you bring in the golden boy head coach. And you start, and you probably got 10 years of buffer.
Yeah,
you remember who Josh McDaniels drafted last time?
I said McDermott. I meant McDaniels.
Yeah, remember last time he was the head coach who he drafted in the
Tim
first
Tebow.
Round? He traded up for Tim Tebow.
Tim Tebow. Think about that.
Little Tebow mania.
That wasn't Caserio, brother.
But I'm just saying, if I have an opportunity to go somewhere where the quarterback is already in place and he's young and he's going to be there for a long time, mm-hmm. I'd rather go there than go to somewhere and try to. Do it myself, especially you can look. He's done the scouting to see who is coming up and going to be available in the draft. Mm-hmm. And so there's not going to be a lot of chances for him to even get one of those quarterbacks. So
they have two first round picks.
Jacksonville? Maybe it's just I have a bias towards Jacksonville.
No, I do too.
I would not.
That would be the, Rams pick.
To me, that's an organization that has to play half of their damn games in London. Why would I want to go into a situation like that?
I agree with you. I'm just saying.
He go from New England to Old England.
Good one, JB.
One of the last things I'd say about the evolution of Bill O'Brien, the one question we're all going to have is the evolution that he makes as a game manager. And I've actually seen improvement in that area. We talked about it last week in the New England Patriots game. He called the timeout.
Yes.
That's always going to be an area of concern. We're always going to critique that harder than any other thing.
I ain't going to throw a parade for him calling that timeout.
He's
come on,
he's
man.
Evolved.
You got better. You got better, right?
That one was good.
He got better.
It was fine.
Got better.
I mean, I'm pretty sure in the Kingwood Football League, every head coach in the KFL would have called that timeout.
No question. But at one point, he stood up at a press conference and said it's not his job.
Yeah, that's
so,
true. That's true.
Hey, it's all about getting better each and every day, baby.
If you're at the bottom, there's only one way to go.
That's right.
But he baby got better steps. In that area. Baby I enjoyed steps. It. The OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham in for Landry Locker. Landry will be joining Clint Sterner. 2 to 6, they'll be at the Twin Peaks. Webster, stop on by. Say hello to them if you're in the area. If not, keep it right here. Sports Radio 610. For the OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.